Today is Friday, June 3rd. This is VOA's International Edition. I'm Ira Melvin in Washington. Coming up, we have breaking news about the U.S. role in the conflict in Yemen. This weekend marks the 27th anniversary of the deadly Chinese crackdown on protesters gathered in Beijing's Tiananmen Square.
The four tanks running from Tiananmen Square to the students and ran over students, 11 bodies were collected.
And we hear from British actress Cynthia Erivo. She's nominated for a Tony Award for her portrayal of Celie in the revival of The Color Purple. All on today's International Edition. We start with a story about the United States and its relationship with Yemen. The U.S. military says it conducted four counterterrorism strikes against al-Qaeda militants in Yemen in recent months, including one May 19th that killed four enemy combatants. U.S. Central Command says the strikes killed a total of 15 members of al-Qaeda in the Arabian Peninsula. The four strikes were not previously announced. Altogether, the U.S. has launched nine strikes this year against the group, which the U.S. says is a persistent threat in the region and to Western interests. Pentagon's been increasing its military support for operations against AQAP militants in Yemen, including intelligence, ships, and special operation forces. American special operations have been advising in Yemeni, Emirati, and Arab coalition forces in the region, including intelligence, ships, and special operation forces. All right, let's head to Andrew Palchesky now as we talk about what's happening on social media. I take it that hasn't been once since that story's just breaking, but what's trending hot today?
Well, the big thing that people are talking about is Twitter itself. Oftentimes we see this where the social media companies become the social media stories, and so this is the case for Twitter today for two different reasons. First, rumors are swirling that there was a meeting or supposed meeting between Twitter CEO Jack Dorsey and Yahoo CEO Marissa Mayer. And the rumors are that there could be a merger between Yahoo and Twitter.
Really?
This would combine one of the biggest social media networks with one of the biggest search engines. And this is because Twitter is kind of faltering a little bit. They're losing some of their growth. They're not growing as quickly as Facebook and some other apps, which we'll talk about in a second. So their thought is that they could combine with Yahoo, maybe keep themselves viable. Yahoo could be maybe more of a competitor to Google, a bit of a win-win. Right now, it's all just rumors, but there's a lot of speculation on social media what this would mean. Some people saying, well, these are two companies that are basically going the way of the dinosaur as far as social media is concerned.
Especially Yahoo. I mean, they have been the target of rumors for months and months now, have they not?
Oh, absolutely. Everything from getting taken over by AT&T to, you know, a whole other companies that aren't even tech-related. So it's all these rumors that are swirling about, but that's some of the things that I've seen on social media, people saying, yeah, that's how you innovate and want to be new. You go with Yahoo, which is, you know, the hottest website of the late 1990s.
You know, that's really a spin on it.
Yeah.
You know, if you're an investor and you say, hey, yeah, you got to invest in Yahoo, and I'm not advising for or against, I'm not going to do that, but nevertheless, you take a look and you say, well, they haven't gotten the best press of late.
Yeah.
But then you have people say, yeah, but that gives you room for growth, right?
Right. And well, it's, you know, speaking of bad press, though, that's the other story I alluded to is that we've just gotten word that Snapchat has passed Twitter in the total number of daily users. Snapchat now has about 150 million daily users. Twitter has about 140 million. So these two stories together are kind of playing off each other. People saying, well, maybe these rumors are true if they're trying to talk to Yahoo because they're not growing as quickly as Snapchat, which has only been around for a couple years. Facebook has 1.4 billion users around the world. So a lot of speculation about that, but enough about the social media because the real trend, big story, trending worldwide today, hashtag National Donut Day. So happy National Donut Day to you. I went out and got some donuts earlier, and there were many people in line who were tweeting and using the hashtag. I saw them on their phones taking pictures of the donuts, as I myself did, and lots of gifts of Homer Simpson, probably the most famous fictional donut eater out there, you know, lots and lots of photos and gifs and little videos of Homer Simpson enjoying donuts and saying, Donuts.
Donuts. Of course, I saw you walk in with the bag of donuts. Did you stop at my desk and offer me one? Absolutely.
You should have stopped me and waved me down, and then we could have gone and could have brought donuts into the. Well, it would have been rude to our listeners because we couldn't offer them any donuts. I thought that would be, you know, why would we sit here and eat donuts when our listeners can't enjoy them? Or they always can. They can go out and get some if they want.
Talk about spin, buddy. You know? Andrew Palczewski's social media. Thank you, Andrew. Let's go back to the story we talked about as far as Yemen was concerned. Some breaking news as far as the United States and Yemen is concerned. On the line with us now is VOA Pentagon correspondent Carla Babb. And Carla, what's new as far as that relationship is concerned?
Yeah, Ira. So they've announced that there were four additional counterterrorism strikes that the U.S. military conducted in Yemen that had previously not been announced. Now, these are not all recent, and the U.S. media has been pushing the military for a long time now to be more transparent about its strikes in Yemen, and this is their response saying, okay, we are being more transparent. The first most recent one was May 19th. That was in Shabwa government in central Yemen. That one killed four al-Qaeda operatives. Then they went back all the way to February, two strikes in February, one in Shabwa like this one, and then the other one in East Yemen, killing nine more operatives, and then they announced a strike on March 30th that killed two al-Qaeda operatives in central Yemen, this time in Azan. Now, you're probably wondering, why go back? And they wanted to kind of clear the air and release all of the counterterrorism strikes that have happened in 2016 to say, yes, we're being transparent now. We're getting these out to you as fast as we can before the media would have to ask about these to get any sort of idea on what kind of strikes the U.S. military were carrying out in Yemen. So this is a big shift in their basically the way that they're treating the media now. One of the things that I found interesting is this doesn't necessarily include 2015 or 2014, so there may still be strikes out there that we just don't know about.
And also, we were just talking about with Andrew Palczewski, we were talking about spin. This really is spin now. Does this mean now that something else might be happening? I hate to ask you to speculate, and we shouldn't do that as journalists, but I'm doing it anyway.
Well, again, they didn't allude to anything in the future, but when we asked the Colonel Pat Ryder, who is the spokesman for Central Command, which oversees the operations not only in Yemen, but in Iraq and Syria, when we asked him about it, he said this was because we were telling you all about the strikes in Iraq and the strikes in Syria, and we're trying to get these to you as fast as we can. And we asked, well, what is taking so long? He says, well, the U.S. military needs to collect the intelligence and reflect on the strikes. He said there's been some times where you gather intelligence, and that intelligence then allows you to conduct other strikes in different areas or to listen to the chatter and get more intel on what's going on with these al-Qaeda operatives in Yemen. But he did say that, you know, there may be delays. I'm not promising that these are going to come out the very next day, but we are going to be much more transparent on getting these out to you without you having to ask us first. We're going to try to maintain the transparency because that is the military is using the U.S. government funds. So it's a responsibility to let the U.S. citizens and the world that is working and partnering with the U.S. military, let them know what they're doing when they're doing it.
Carla, I thank you so much for the update. Carla Babb, VOA's Pentagon correspondent, with us here on International Edition. We check the top stories in the world now. U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry, along with top European and Arab diplomats, meet in Paris in an effort to revive stalled Israeli-Palestinian peace talks. Four bodies have been found, 342 migrants rescued from a boat that capsized in the Mediterranean Sea early Friday. Donald Trump supporters leaving the presidential candidate's rally in San Jose, California, were pounced on by protesters, some of whom threw eggs and punches. Scientists say extreme rainfall, such as that hitting France, has increased worldwide and especially in Europe because of man-made climate change. And the World Health Organization's chief says she has convened an expert committee to consider whether the Rio de Janeiro Olympics should proceed as planned, given recent concerns raised about the Zika virus. Expanded coverage of these stories and more on the VOAnews.com website and on our VOA mobile app. This is International Edition. And some things happening on this Friday as far as Wall Street and the business world is concerned. And for that, we head live to New York City and International Editions business correspondent Jill Malandrino. Jill, what you got?
Hey, so the employment situation report came out today, which is the most key piece of data that the Fed considers for monetary policy, and it showed that the U.S. economy created the fewest number of jobs in more than 5 years in May as employment in the manufacturing and construction sectors fell sharply. Gains were also limited by a month-long strike by Verizon workers, and that impacted the report by 34,000 jobs. As a result, the equity market sold off, the U.S. dollar traded lower, while gold soared higher. So this puts the Fed in a precarious position because they have been signaling for a rate hike in the coming months. Traders are speculating for June or July, but since the Fed is data dependent and its intention was to raise rates soon, if jobs continue to gain and economic data remained consistent with growth, that course could change. Fed Chairman Janet Yellen is speaking in Philadelphia on Monday, and that may alleviate some uncertainty surrounding the exact timing of when she will remove some accommodation. But right now, it's a pretty tricky time for the markets overall. We have the FOMC meeting on June 14th and 15th, which will ultimately determine if we have an interest rate hike or not. And then the Brexit vote on June 23rd, in which the UK will decide on whether or not it is leaving the EU. And in my mind, Brexit is a much bigger deal than an interest rate hike because it has political and social implications as well. It's not just a vote on market activity and international trade. There's a big populist movement in the UK right now, and we're starting to see that more and more around the world and in our US elections, in fact. But the uncertainty lies, when we look at it from a trading perspective, what the economic damage and costs that could hit the UK would follow after we get the vote on June 23rd.
Joe, have yourself a marvelous weekend. Thanks for being with us. We'll talk to you again next week. Joe Malandrino joining us live from New York City with our business report. This is VOA.
This is Science in a Minute.
In January, astronomers from the California Institute of Technology got the scientific world buzzing when they revealed evidence of a big planet circling the sun in the outskirts of the solar system. The planet, nicknamed Planet 9, has not been directly imaged yet. So far, findings related to its discovery are based on factors such as the gravitational behavior of a group of objects that are mostly orbiting beyond the Kuiper Belt. Astronomers at Sweden's Lund University say that it is highly likely that Planet 9 was actually snatched from another solar system by our young sun some 4.5 billion years ago. The researchers figured that since stars are formed in tight clusters, this would make it possible for one star to steal a planet or planets from another as they pass close to each other. The researchers claim Planet 9 would be the first exoplanet discovered in our solar system. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
Twenty-seven years ago this weekend, Chinese troops violently retook Tiananmen Square in Beijing, where an estimated million or more pro-democracy protesters had set up camp, and they kept that camp up for weeks. The violence left what is still an unknown number of people dead, but the number could be in the millions. We welcome to International Edition Dr. Yang Zhan Li. Dr. Yang was a student at UC Berkeley in California when he returned to Beijing to join the Tiananmen student movement. He escaped. And when he returned to China again in 2002, he was imprisoned for 5 years. And upon his release, he founded a group called the Initiatives for China, and he still directs that this day. Dr. Yang, thanks so much for being with us. What are your clearest memories of that day in Beijing 27 years ago?
The most brutal thing that I remember is that the morning of June 4th, when the students were trying to leave Tiananmen Square, the four tanks running from Tiananmen Square to the student and ran over student, 11 bodies were collected. And that's the most brutal thing I remember. But we should not forget another image. That is a tank man who stood in the string of tanks, but on different spots. So my question remains, why that in on that scene the tank did not run over, did not open fire, but on a different spot where I witnessed the tank run over and open fires to the crowd and ran over students. So this question remains. Now I think the soldier who drove the tank refused the order. So, but unfortunately, we know nothing about what happened to these two men. But this year, we are trying to have a petition demanding for the truth by these heroes.
Stepping back just a bit about the Chinese government's apparent refusal to just talk about what happened. They're basically trying to ignore it, are they not?
Yes, they ignore it and also made a tremendous effort to plant so-called amnesia among the people in China and also try to project image to the whole world that nothing has happened. So that is why we came up with a project to push back against the Chinese government this effort. And the project is to try to inscribe a Tiananmen massacre document into UNESCO's Memory of the World Register. Just a few days ago, we got our nomination submitted to UNESCO. So Chinese government tried very hard, and succeeded to a certain degree that so many young people in China nowadays do not know what happened 27 years ago.
So therefore, their attempt, in your mind anyway, has been successful so far, correct? The Chinese government's attempt to wipe it from memory?
Yeah, they have succeeded to a certain degree. But, you know, with internet and with words of mouth, many in China actually know what happened. But because of threat, because of persecution, many people just choose not to talk about it.
Have you been back to China since your imprisonment?
Oh, yes. I tried and never been able to enter China. I tried to enter Hong Kong four times. I got stopped at airport.
And what was that imprisonment life? What can you tell us about that?
When I first got there, I was kept in solitary confinement, which lasted nearly 15 months. During the 15 months, I had no information whatsoever from outside, got no book to read, nobody to talk to except the interrogators, and I almost went insane. And there were a lot of worries, anxieties, and even regrets. And I had to write poems in my head to prevent my memory from being lost.
Tell us what is planned for today, this being Friday, the 3rd of June, and what you're hoping to do.
Yeah, this is the eve of June 4th, which marks the 27th anniversary of the massacre. We planned to have an international video conference with six cities around the world. But this morning when we had a meeting, work meeting before the open session, we found that we have been under attack from I don't know where. And the server we were using has been attacked or paralyzed. Now we try to figure out other way to continue this conference.
Dr. Yang Jin Li is a survivor, obviously, of Tiananmen Square, and now runs the Initiatives for China organization. Dr. Yang, thank you so much for being with us.
Yeah, thank you.
And we move now from that to entertainment. The Tony Awards are June 12th. British actress Cynthia Erivo is nominated for her portrayal of Celie in the revival of The Color Purple. Here's International Edition's David Byrd.
There's no question Cynthia Erivo has the musical and dramatic skills to earn a Tony. The English actress has to take the character Celie from age 8 to 50, and her voice is so powerful that it rivals that of Oscar winner Jennifer Hudson, who is also in the show. The musical retelling of Alice Walker's Pulitzer Prize-winning book takes Celie, an uneducated, passive farm girl, through several painful disappointments until she stands up for herself. Erivo says that though Celie has to overcome devastating loss and betrayal, she is a fighter and a survivor.
I don't think she feels sorry for herself in the slightest. And I think not that I did that the first time, but I think I'm more confident about that this time. So that is the thing that I really tried to work on. I wanted to make her a full person with flaws and not be afraid of the flaws that she might have, because I think that's what makes people root for her, the fact that she is really, really human. She just happens to be going through some horrific things that she is showing how she can survive.
The role is one made famous by Oscar winner Whoopi Goldberg in the 1985 film. Erivo, who starred as Celie in the London production of the musical, says she was a huge fan of Goldberg's and was inspired by her performance.
I guess saw on screen this woman who was unafraid of taking the bull by the horns and really going for these really cool roles fully and truthfully. And what I do know is that she's been really supportive of me in this role, and that means the world, because it's hard to step into the shoes of someone who is so brilliant.
But Cynthia Erivo says that she is still amazed by earning a Tony nomination in her first Broadway role.
More than anything, it's just a bit of a dream come true. I didn't know that you could do this on your debut. I didn't know that this would happen. So being here and still saying that I'm a Tony nominee is like, oh gosh, okay, that's happened.
The Color Purple is nominated for 4 Tonys this year, including Erivo for Best Performance by an Actress in a Leading Role in a Musical. The show itself is nominated for Best Revival of a Musical. Danielle Brooks is nominated for Best Performance by an Actress in a Featured Role in a Musical. And John Doyle is nominated for Best Direction of a Musical. The Tony Awards will be handed out June 12th in New York City. In Washington, I'm David Byrd.
This is International Edition. You can find us at voanews.com. Like us on Facebook, VOA Now. Follow us on Twitter at VOAIE. Thanks for joining us. I'm Ira Melman. Have a good day.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Under President Barack Obama's landmark Power Africa initiative, the U.S. Agency for International Development, or USAID, recently launched a new assistance program that aims to improve power distribution performance and increase connections in Nigeria. The 2-year agreement will provide management consultation to 3 Nigerian distribution companies. The agreement will also advance major infrastructure investments and strengthen systems in the distribution companies. U.S. Ambassador James Entwistle witnessed the signing in Abuja between USAID partner Power Africa Transactions Reforms Program and the chief executives of the Abuja, Benin, and Eco Distribution Companies. We believe that distribution companies are the starting point for improving the entire power sector value chain, said Ambassador Entwistle. Through improving the performance of distribution companies, we will see increased electricity supply and access. Our joint efforts will improve the lives of countless Nigerians and serve as a model for other African countries. Announced by President Obama in 2013, Power Africa is working with sub-Saharan African governments, the private sector, and other partners, including Nigeria, to add more than 30,000 megawatts of cleaner, more efficient electricity generation capacity and 60 million new connections by 2030. The initiative has already helped financially close over 4,000 megawatts worth of transactions, representing almost 14% of the initial 30,000 megawatt goal. In Nigeria, Power Africa supports the strengthening of the energy sector through credit enhancement, grants, technical assistance, and investment promotion efforts. Power Africa is also working to mobilize affordable and long-term financing to support capital and operational expenditure requirements for successor generation and distribution companies to accelerate electricity market development. The United States is proud to partner with Nigeria to help meet the country's power needs for a better future for the people of Nigeria and Africa.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.